lapel mic here, but I'm not certain how. One time. Yeah. If I turn that on, it does actually work. Sure. It was working before.
Thank you very much. I'm Tom Worthington, a IT consultant around Canberra and the Traps, and I'm more familiar in this environment from presenting lectures on website design and electronic commerce to the ANU students on occasions, but I won't be setting an exam for you at the end of this session. We've got a panel here today. I'm going to let them introduce themselves, just to remind you who they all are. We have one microphone in case you can't hear them. If you can't, put up your hand. I thought we'd just let each person give an initial, any thoughts that they, a preview of what they're going to talk about tomorrow or something, recap on what they said today. I have one standing question, which I actually use on all the ANU students. Every other presentation which I go to is, how can we make money out of this? Which is the standard question. Anybody should introduce themselves again and just give us a few starting thoughts before we ask them questions. Starting at this end.
My name is Paul Kengrove. I'm the Asia Pacific Solutions Manager for Novell. For those of you who don't know, we've become involved, I guess, in many open source solutions with the acquisition of a company called SUSE and Zimian. And we did this because we'd like to make lots of money. Let's not be shy about this. Whilst we all are supportive of the open source movement, we're also recipients of some of the benefits. So for us, I guess the benefits of open source, which I'll be highlighting more in my talk this afternoon, which you shouldn't miss, are really about why we use open source and how we actually cut internal development costs, how we take our solutions to a wider part of the market, and how people can benefit from having a mixture of both open source and closed source solutions.
Elizabeth.
Elizabeth Gordon-Werner, and I just spoke before lunch, so I'm assuming most people might have been here. For the government, of course, it's not how to make money, but how to get best value for the money they spend. And I think because I just spoke before lunch, I probably don't need to say too much. I look after the government's open source, the New South Wales government's open source project, which is a working group of 50 agencies, probably 80 members, a sort of a collaborative, loose collaborative effort, I guess, to help us all understand what's out there and if there are opportunities to take them.
My name is Mark Inglara. I run the alternate desktop practice for a company called SI2. We specialise in open source and Linux desktop projects for medium and large organisations, both the public and private sector. New South Wales Roads and Traffic Authority's migration to Star Office last year was one of our projects. We're very much focused about how do you run the business case, do the business case analysis, how do you do the evaluation, migration and rollout of an open source oriented desktop without disrupting the business and getting the best total cost of ownership result. We do a little bit of work in the alternate messaging space as well, but we're very much focused around users and applications than infrastructure and databases, for instance.
My name is Abhi Miller. I run the Canberra office of Squiz. Squiz is an wholly owned Australian open source development company. Our flagship products are in the web content management space. I've been working for the last 2.5 years on implementing our product within some government agencies here in Canberra, both federal as well as territory and state levels, which I will be speaking more about tomorrow, so don't miss it. Going over the projects that we've done, why our product was selected, the successes that we've had in those projects, and how we got our product into the government space.
Okay, we've heard initially from the panel. Now, did they answer those questions that were in the program there? If the code is freely available, what business model works when dealing with government? I'd just like to ask Avi on the end there, does this all depend on a particular business model?
For us, with Squiz, our business model has always been primarily focused on a service-oriented business. We make our money primarily through the cost of development, customer development, and the cost of supporting our product. So the fact that our product is open source, it really just gives us a more flexible tool to start discussions on and say, well, at this point, there are no upfront licensing fees, there's no ongoing licensing fees. You can almost discount the cost of the product itself. All you're really worried about is what is my ongoing cost? How much do I pay for support? How much are you going to charge me to develop? The other benefit of having the open source product as a base is that no one's locked into a particular vendor. They don't have to come to us for support. As I said earlier, is that they went out, got our product, but don't use us for the ongoing development of that. So, you know, the flexibility is still there. They're using an open source Australian product and also using another open source SDK for the ongoing development of that product, which we're quite happy with as well.
And I'd say Elizabeth sort of answered the question this morning about, do your departmental procurement guidelines cover the world of open source fairly well? I think I'll throw it open to questions from the floor. Come on, have you got a curly question to ask about all of this? Right way up there in the back corner.
One question I've got. Because the code is open, the person that's got in here, or would you, both you can go in as new support, or if you're going to add to an open source product, would you have to embed part of the code?
So anybody in particular you'd like to ask that of? How about Paul?
Well, not necessarily Linux. Perhaps it's an application rather than an OS.
Okay, I guess it sort of brings you to the issue of it depends on what the source was and if it's appropriately licensed. Depending on the size of the project and the impact of it, we may actually take a by the client and all the people who actually own the potential parts of that solution. The ability for a client to actually get service from many different places, in fact, is a big plus. It's one of the second most immediate arguments we get from people. It's all about choice. So arguably with that, like our service, they can go to any number of another companies who can provide service. Even if they've never seen the product, if the source is freely downloadable, somebody can look at it and say, well, I know how this works, I know why it's not working now, therefore I can help you with that specific issue that you have. So really, it's sort of the ultimate non-locking tool. It's not a difficult process. It's probably, in fact, less complex than looking at taking over the maintenance and support of a proprietary or custom-built piece of code, because it's generally built up of a lot of other open source pieces, so there are a lot of things in common that we've seen in other projects or other solutions, because in open source people tend to reuse a lot of the things that's already out there rather than saying, let me build my own proprietary database when one already exists and I can have as part of the project. So in many ways it's easier to actually take over a project based on open source than it is on a whole bunch of proprietary code.
And anybody else on the panel like to jump in?
From the other side, you need that in order to, we as a service company, we offer things like service level agreements and warranties and stuff like that on our product. So in order for externally written code certainly to be added to the Matrix core product, it goes through what we call the Matrix certification. We've written a product called Snoopy. I know there's another product called Snoopy, but our one's also called Snoopy. Snoopy is an automated testing, a unit testing regime that will take all third-party code and run through Snoopy for 2 weeks first. That just hammers that code on a... It runs all the scenarios that we have pulled up to date, the way Matrix works, and we just get Snoopy to keep running and looking for errors, basically. So until you get... We don't even look at the code. A human doesn't look at the code until Snoopy passes. Once Snoopy passes it, then a human goes and looks at the code and tries to work out if there are ways of simplifying that code, making, in fact, sometimes more general. We have clients who write specific modules for Matrix that are focused on their particular requirement. We'll take a look at that and say, well, you know, if you add this a little bit more, you've got this general functionality that we can then add back into the core. Once we do that, Swift then takes over if the client wants. We'll take over management of that code for them, so we'll ensure that through every version of Matrix that we upgrade, we then upgrade that code alongside with it. So they know that the modules that they may have initially developed, they can hand back to us if software development isn't their core business. They just happen to have internal developers that did it. They can hand it back to us, and we'll then maintain that functionality for them over the life of the product.
Okay, now there was another question up the back.
Without being able to speak, I'm not in a position to speak about RTA's specific decisions about that, but in general the reason that we've got clients that go to Star Office rather than Open Office now is that they still get the benefit of what they've got now to Star Office. The RTA moved about 18 months ago, and so there was still a fair degree of concern about the indemnity behind open source products. So they felt more comfortable giving a little bit of money to an organisation that provides technical support, software support, and indemnity for the product, rather than go alone. At that point, there wasn't a big name organisation like Novell, for instance, that would stand behind Open Office, other than the Sun, when they made that decision. I think it was just that for the amount of money that their licences cost, which was not substantial, the support of the indemnity.
So can I just ask the curly question there? Is that actually open source then that they've bought?
I don't think it meets the open source.
They, as far as I understand, some open sources the source code for Star Office and calls it Open Office, but there's bits and pieces that they've got that they don't need.
So I think the Star Office product, you know, we can classify it entirely open source because there are some proprietary components in there, not available.
I mean, from the point of view of somebody who works for government, a lot of governments still prefer to work with vendors, actually, but if the vendor can offer something that's actually open source, that gives you the best of both worlds.
Right.
For those organisations that decide they want to pilot one particular aspect of open source, or get a taste or a feel for it, because they... solve a discrete problem. How does that affect the business case? If you can go to them and say, yes, you
certainly been what Munich has done.
Yes.
There's always going to be a core group of people that are going to use extensive something about a system that makes it more difficult.
When clients ask us to write a project, we generally say, look, don't jump without putting the parachute on first. Pick a problem that really exists, so we actually have some real data to work on, and do it step by step. Companies still have to run. Novell, and I'll talk about what we did, but over a space of about 2.5 years, we migrated from a mixture of different software to completely Linux at the back end, and we're about 98% of Linux at the desktop. A bit of network thrown in for good measure in a couple of places. So it's something that we did on a sort of salami slicing method. We didn't say, let's sort of do it in some huge big bites. And as we went, we sort of learned more. And it was interesting for us because having now done it ourselves, it gives us a reasonable level of credibility when we talk to clients. So, well, yes, we've been there. Or as a desktop user, yes, I've done the migration myself. I understand what you're going through. And not from a here's a marketing document, but I remember when I did it. And it wasn't that long ago. But generally we found it's not as painful as people think, especially the open desktop. From a document standpoint, we didn't go through a wholesale document migration process at all. We in fact left them either in Microsoft, all documents that were created new from a certain date, we mandated in OpenOffice. And historical documents with PDF via OpenOffice. So if we wanted a copy fixed in time of how they were with PDF and we've archived them, but we're now pretty much moving towards an internal 100% standard of only using OpenOffice format documents. The only areas we've had major problems for a couple of years, and at which stage the replacements are going to be based around open source. So I'm a firm advocate of actually using some business intelligence. Don't do something for the sake of doing it. If it's a valid business case, then go with it, let it run out. And there are other technical ways of tackling whether it's using things to go down your journey to use open source.
Questions from the...
Yeah.
Not always at the forefront, but when things look like they're sensible and so forth, you can. And actually, sometimes government departments are at the forefront because they have to do things with little money, so they have to make things work. So you'll find probably looking in government, it doesn't matter where in Australia you are, you'll find there's some very innovative solutions, and probably some of them will be open source.
Come to you. The opposition and government policies we heard about this morning seem to be essentially about removing any roadblocks to open source and government. Should we, as a nation, go beyond that and be handing out money to people to write open source software, or should we just leave that up to the market? Because we have from very small to large companies. Should this be an industry development sort of thing, or will that put the kiss of death on the whole activity?
I personally would want to see... Personally, I don't know that there needs to be a grant specific for open source, but I agree with Elizabeth that if the government's paying by government, it should. Because the government's not a software development company. You know, it has no interest in ongoing management and sale of software, so why not give it away? Why not let anybody else sort of benefit from the money that they've basically given the government to pay for? But again, that's personal.
Reuse what I've done before then and make us more efficient then, that's, for my money, that's share with people and for other programs. But I think the fit is maybe quite good between open source and them.
Just a question. Is the source of my source CMS available to Omoloba?
No.
Because I own a web development company, and I was wondering if it would be possible for me, for example, just to provide a service on this on my...
But as we desired it to MySource Classic product, the previous version, one of the biggest installations we had of MySource Classic in the world is the University of Western Australia.
Yes.
Who have never paid to us for anything. They've never come to us. They've in fact written about a few modules for MySource Classics themselves, which are now part of the core that they can provide it back to us. But yeah, they've got a large installation.
I mean, one thing, and I think this is part of what we're discussing, I think we're on the verge here of looking and trying to discover business models that work for small to large enterprises, basically, and with government helping to make that work. And I was really interested to work with Squizzer Software and Squiz and Babel, because it's an area that we have to discover along the way. It's not something where, you know, we've all got these neural pathways. We're so used to thinking in a certain way that every time you think that way, it's like a river going down in the sand, and in the end you're down there, and the sand's up here, and you know that there must be different ways, but you can't see out yet. And as soon as somebody takes a ladder and looks over, then everybody else has these new ways of thinking and new ways of working. And I think the business community is going to work as normal, but just slightly differently with some of these new models.
Yeah, well, the thing is that, you know, in the case of my source, it would be a service, basically, what I'm providing. The only problem with that is that, let's say that any other person provides a service of probably everybody would say, oh no, my source CMS is no issue or whatever, because the service you receive from the different provider is not so good, you know what I mean?
From a selfish point of view, Swiss quite likes it.
Okay, I think we're just about out of... One of which is that we are still searching for what is the appropriate model, and that there may be different ones for different sized companies and agencies. And perhaps this goes beyond the issue of how do we make money out of this. There are also public interest issues involved. So I think we've explored the issues. We'll hear more about Squiz tomorrow and a few other topics, but...
Please join me in thanking Tom Worthington for doing this part, allowing me to take a load off my feet.
All right. Joining us now for
a look at, will I get this right, industry and resources? Is that right?
Yeah.
Yes, because I keep thinking infrastructure and resources and then thinking, no, that's another state and I'll just get it entirely wrong. Kevin will be presenting Open Source and Government, The Pragmatic Choice. Kevin Russell. Just like magic, I can make it disappear.
Does it do 10 to 16?
It was definitely doing that for me.
I'm Kevin Russell, and yes, I am from Western Australia. The Eagles did win. Yeah, we won't talk about the Dockers, okay? It's great to be here in Canberra again. I've been here a few times, and the last time I was here, I almost bumped into Kim Beazley. I think the chances of that happening right now is quite slim. He's reduced quite a lot of weight, hasn't he? So, I don't know what sit with these polies. I mean, these guys... off for these brisk walks in the morning, John Howard's off, you know, around the lake, you know, that sort of stuff. He actually does give his minders a bit of run for the money, I think. Or it could be just his short legs moving faster, I don't know. Today what I'm going to be attempting to look at is basically, let's go and try to dispel some of the myths that we have with open source software. We'll look at, you know, what should be in a business case for open source software. We'll look at the elements within that business case and some of the do's and don'ts that we should be looking at. Myths. Main attraction is the price. Maybe not. Maybe not. I think it is more to do with the flexibility, you being able to do what you want to do with the software. And I think it's also a difference between being leasing software, even though you might pay for software, a version of Microsoft Office, for example, you don't really own it. They say that the savings are not real. Get real. I mean, because it is there. The savings are there. It is. If you are not a good IT manager, it doesn't matter what solutions you put in place, you're going to have difficulties. You will have savings. The biggest part about the savings is, even if there isn't any savings, for me, I come from an economic development organization, and even if there isn't any savings in going to open source software, it doesn't matter. The money that you're spending to manage, to maintain, to money spent locally doesn't just help the companies that are benefiting from it, it helps everyone. It helps all of us. The reason why Australia's managing right now, I mean, I don't know if you know about what's happening in the stock market right now. There's a lot of stuff happening out there. The U.S. is feeling very shaky right now, and Australia is as well. But Australia, and the way we can make it even stronger is by supporting our local ICT industry, which is where our open source drive is coming from. It is being able to support our local ICT economy. Support. We're talking about support. If you choose to buy support, you can, even with an open source product. You can choose to think Google will provide you even more support than the companies that are providing support, because it is a community thing. It's a community thing. You will get more help from the community. But it is good if you, as a government organization, if you choose to reduce your risk in terms of getting support, pay for the support from the companies from where you're getting this. Yes, we all know about the SCORE and IBM and SCORE and Novell and SCORE and SCORE and SCORE and everyone else. Yeah, but has any of you actually tried to sue a proprietary company? Well, Microsoft, for example. I mean, have any of you tried to? Your chances of going any further in legal issues. And you definitely need to get advice if you are going to be developing software using the open source model. Yes, you have to get advice. I mean, the fact that you have to get or not get advice doesn't reduce your legal risks. But basically, it is in terms of the risk itself, it is not any more ask Amazon, ask Google. Well, they are using it, multi-billion dollar companies, for, I think, reasonably critical business. So, yes, it is being used. There is no reason why you shouldn't be using it. Not ready for the desktop? My friend Paul over there, some stats. These stats are very recent. In fact, it's sort of hot off the press. This is something that was done by IDG at the end of last year. They've only just released it. You can have a look at those numbers yourself and decide, you know, whichever way you want to use figures, you can use them. I mean, but they are pretty interesting. If you look at some more stats, this is mostly to do with programming languages and scripting languages. Again, look at Java, J2EE. That's pretty big there. Perl, PHP, open source stuff all the way. Very recently. And I know it's been around for some time, and I've been using it myself. Did have a few difficulties with it. I think it's only taken off in the last, 18 months or so when it's really started moving. And to be 8% there, that is very good. I don't know if you know about the tiger story. One guy said, told the other. I mean, aren't you afraid of the tiger that could actually jump out of the jungle at any minute? And the other guy said, no, not really. He said, come on, don't tell me you can actually run faster than the tiger. He said, no, I don't have to run faster than the tiger, I just have to run faster than you. Which is what I use it. I use it all the time. In fact, this is open office here, running over here. The other thing you don't want to discount is Microsoft Windows will be around. Okay, when you are using OpenOffice or anything, you don't have to go out and start trying to use OpenOffice in a Linux environment. You don't have to. Start with it's easier to move them to anything else after that because it looks the same. So you don't have to give them too much of change at the same time. So. Business case for open source. Let's have a look at this. When you are looking at open source, what are the things you usually think about? Does this look... Yes, these are good things to talk about when you are talking about open source software. But, unfortunately, these are not the business reasons. These are excellent technical reasons. The people that you're putting business cases to don't want to learn these. And by a business perspective, I mean that open source is a business issue. It is not a technical issue. We can all resolve those issues, and because we know we can go to Google, we can go to wherever and find solutions to the problems. Open source is a business issue. Why is it a business issue? I mean, remember, I've already spoken. Put them into a business perspective. And by that I mean simple things like, we all know that, you know, you start this Linux box, you chuck everything at it, it will stay up for 200 days, reliability, yes, we know all of that. Take that and put it into a business perspective. And you're talking about systems are up, we are able to make sure that our users out there will be more productive. You can quantify that if you want to. I mean, 99.999%, etc. I mean, use the terms that these business people know. We're talking to accountants over here, so you need to be able to use the term services and server uptime. They would not, they're not interested in that. You have to talk business. Economic development opportunities. I've already told you about that. That is basically shifting your software license costs to your local ICT industry. Microsoft actually wanted me to remove that statement from things that we can actually achieve with open source software. And the reason that I was given was that we are actually discriminating one software development methodology over another. And that is a whole lot. So I think we've heard the arguments before about, you know, using your influence as a people that are purchasing IT services, IT software, use that to your advantage. The social impact, of course, you will have social impacts. This whole huge digital divide in terms of where our people are in Western Australia. Some of them don't even have access to a phone line. Forget broadband, okay? And we're hoping that through the use of open source software, we can actually narrow that. Not so much getting them broadband, but more to do with make transparency, accountability. That is what we want from the people that we report to. I'm a government employee, but I'm also a person who pays my taxes, and I think we have the accountability and the transparency from them. Let's ask Rob, ministers, will it take to change a light bulb? Did I say that? Yes, I did. Yes, change a light bulb. It's going to be a dark 4 years, isn't it? Yeah, it is. Talking about light bulbs, can I have another light bulb, Joe? Is it okay? Yeah. All right, man.